curated to encourage leaders at all levels to be their best selves and to bring a fresh, curious perspective to today's issues in business and culture. Our goal is to equip listeners with the resources to always move forward.
Welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I'm Carla Soans, and I'm here with Ron Kitchens. And today, Ron, we are going to be sharing a podcast that you did, an interview that you did with Jeremy Cowart. And I'm going to ask you a few questions about that. But first, I just have to say that we had the great privilege of hosting Jeremy at our economics conference this year in Nashville. And what a story. And what a person and a dynamic individual that has so much courage. Can you tell the listening audience what they can should really lean into as they're listening to your interview with Jeremy? And tell them a little bit about Jeremy as well.
So this interview is clearly a man crush interview. And I do these sometimes that I hope that everyone else will enjoy. But the fact of the matter is I'm doing it because I have a man crush on whoever we're interviewing. And Jeremy is one of those. So he not only is a celebrity photographer, has gone on tour, went on a year-long tour with Britney Spears as a tour photographer. He's done hundreds of album cover artwork. But, you know, he's invented and sells different photography pieces of equipment. He is, and we'll hear on the podcast, that he is doing a new hotel, the Purpose Hotel, which is very close to breaking ground. That he's an amazing guy who, frankly, is just cooler than I am. I mean, clearly he is. But he also is somebody who his commitment to family, and I've gotten to know Jeremy some a little bit fairly well. I don't know how you describe it. But I know him to be, you know, a father of four who is just, man, he's doing it all the right way. And so he's somebody that I wanted folks to get to meet at Catalyst University when he's here and understand that not all leadership and success is lineal. And it all doesn't look the same. We get to be great at what we're great at, but it doesn't mean we have to be stuck with what we're great at. And Jeremy's about the pivot. And he talks a lot in this about how do you know when it's time to pivot? And, you know, I mentioned Jeremy's highly successful at photography, but he's pivoting and doing a different style of art that he talks about in this interview. So I hope people walk away with as big a man crush on Jeremy as I have.
Can't wait to listen in.
Hey, Jeremy, welcome to the podcast. We're so excited that you're going to be with us on June 20th at Catalyst University. And for some of our audience who may not be as familiar with you yet, can you kind of give us a quick overview of, you know, who Jeremy Cowart is? Because somebody asked me that the other day and I went, well, he's a photographer. Well, yeah, but he's also a social entrepreneur. Well, yeah, but he invented some camera stuff. Yeah, well, so what's your mom tell people who you are? And then what's the truth of who Jeremy is?
Yeah, I've even had a tough time answering it as well lately when people ask me, strangers ask me. I have no idea what mom says. Who knows? But I think ultimately I'm just an idea chaser. You know, I just constantly have ideas and I'm always trying to decipher which are the lame ideas and which are the ones worth pursuing. And, you know, the mediums can take many forms right now with a lot of fine art and painting. But yeah, I'm building a hotel, which has been a really long but rewarding, exciting journey. Do a lot of public speaking. I've got a book coming out in April. Still shoot some quite a bit, photography, although that's purposefully slowing down. I'm trying to shut it down. So we'll see about that. So yeah, I don't know. I think just the word artist sums me up, I would say.
It's an awesome description. And my mom can't tell you what I do. She was telling somebody not long ago about, they asked what I did. And then they called me and said, are you in the CIA? I said, what? They said, well, your mom said you do something with the government, but it must be a secret because she couldn't really describe what it is. I don't actually do anything in the government, but all right, we should talk.
That's hilarious.
So two things that you said that I want to drill deeper on. The first one is the hotel, and I want to come back to it. But this idea that as an entrepreneur, a creator, that you're stepping away and intentionally doing less photography. I'm fascinated by that. You know, our mutual friend, John Acuff has, you know, written books about quitting. But this idea of how do you know it's time to leave something that is so much your identity? I mean, I'm not bragging to our audience, but, or, you know, saying it's not true, but you're not just a photographer. I mean, you're a celebrity photographer. You get to go on tour with Britney Spears. You know, you shoot album covers of some of the best bands in America. And that somewhat has got to be your identity, particularly since you live in Nashville. How do you know when it's time to pull back from something?
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. It's kind of a long story, but I think when I was young in high school, I knew I wanted to be a fine artist, you know, a type of fine artist that shows canvas work in galleries, that type of artist. And so the last 20 years have been me running away from that in fear of my own work. I've been reading the book, The War of Art, over and over and over again. And he talks about...
I read it again last week.
Oh my gosh. He talks about the resistance. And for me, I've had resistance for 20 years for pursuing my own work. And so graphic design was running away from my art. Web design was running away from it. Photography has been running away from it. You know, in that book, he said, you know, Hitler was a genius painter, but he was so afraid of it that it was easier for him to start World War II than it was for him to face a blank canvas. Obviously, I'm not starting wars, and Hitler's a terrible comparison, but I get the idea that it's easier to, you know, for me to go launch a nonprofit or build a social network or pursue a hotel than it is for me to sit in front of a blank canvas and do my own work. And so I just ultimately, to answer your question, I really like being challenged. I really like learning. I really like growing. And I'm at a point where with photography, I'm not jaded by it. I'm not burnt out by it, but I don't feel like I'm growing. I don't feel like I'm learning. And so I'm more drawn to digging back into my fine art where I'm super uncomfortable. I have to stretch myself. Same with the hotel. The hotel is like, you know, photography is like looking at a bottle of water. There's nothing really left to understand it. Whereas looking at the hotel is like looking out at the ocean, you know, just so vast and so deep and so mysterious and really exciting to jump into that versus continuing to stare at the glass of water.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. So before we get to the hotel, is the challenge, because I do have a book coming out this year in just about a month after yours, and the process of writing was not hard at all for me. It was all about resistance and fear of rejection. And who do you think you are to do this? And should you tell this story? You're going to be pretentious. People aren't going to like you if they know this about you. And so is being a fine artist, is the hard part for you the putting it on canvas part or the kind of you're not worthy and that fear of rejection piece?
I think it's a little bit of all of it. The fine art industry as a whole is very scary to me. I don't, you know, to me, it just seems like a bunch of rich white people with a lot of money, you know, and I don't relate or understand that world. And then it's the mediums, it's a process that I got to learn. It's the, then what do I have to say with my process? It's a lot. It's kind of the whole package that seems very mysterious to me.
Yeah, I get that. I sit on the board. I've just finished my term as chairman, but I still sit on the board of the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts. And it is a completely different world, which is why I liked being on the board. It's because there's always learning, but there's a whole lot of mystery in that world that if you're not part of it, you're clearly not part of it.
Yeah.
And so I kind of get that and not understanding it. But so let's talk about the hotel. So, you know, I don't know how you can go from this kind of creative, amazing guy, hip and cool. Anybody who knows you has met you, know, like you're cooler than I am for everybody you ever met, to in the hotel business, moving that forward, which seems like a sexy business, but I know friends that are in it, and it's much more changing beds and, you know, negotiating for the best soap price than it is hip and cool. Why do this? Why is it worth your time? And how are you going to change the world with it?
Yeah, well, as to why I pursue it, first of all, by the way, I don't ever feel cool. I mean, I live in suburbia and I'm raising 4 children and I'm trying to scramble to get 4 kids to school every morning and doing the, you know, the dad hustle and
Yeah, well, I tried to wear a vest because you did. And I look like the snowman from the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer movie. I look like Burl Ives. You look like, you know, cool musician, Nashville guy. So, yeah, you're always going to be cooler than
me. Well, thanks. That's hilarious. But yeah, with the hotel, I mean, it truly is a God thing. I mean, I was in Los Angeles on April 30th. I know the date, April 30th, 2012. I was there for a photo shoot. And I was we were meeting at a hotel for the photo shoot. So I was just walking through the hallways, minding my own business on my way to the meeting. But as I was walking through the hallways, I noticed how the room numbers were designed. Each one, like, said, "Hello, my name is room 121, like the old school name tags from the 80s. And they caught my eye, and I just thought, oh, it's, you know, cool and clever. And then I just was thinking to myself, like, man, it'd be cool if each one of these rooms told a story. And as you walk through the room hallways, you could, if you wanted, stop and read a paragraph of a story. Then I thought, what could that story be? And then I thought, oh, it'd be nice if it was telling the story of a child in need. Like, basically, each room sponsored a child and told their story. You know, each room could give $1 a night or something to Compassion International. And then as soon as I had that idea, I was like, oh, and the room keys could tell the story of the giving keys. And then after that idea, I was like, once I walked in the room, I looked around and it was like that. It was like in the movies, you know, where the perspective changes, like everything shifts and you suddenly just see the whole vision. Like, at once I understood the desk could be built by homeless people. The internet feed could fight human trafficking. The TVs could show social documentaries. The blankets and soaps could come from places like Thistle Farms. I just got the whole vision. You know, the art could come from humanitarian artist. And so, yeah, it was really one of those moments where I had the idea in an instant at once, all together. I saw the marketing, I saw the future. And so then I actually did run with it right away. I started telling people about it. Then I met with this guy that owns like 100 hotels around the world. And we started to pursue it. And then he just was very obviously not the right fit, a kind of a not great guy. And so I bailed on him, and then I ultimately got just paralyzed in fear, paralyzed in resistance for 3 years. 3 years that I did nothing. I knew the whole time it was still a great idea, but I was just so afraid of it. Like, what freelance photographer goes and builds a multi-hundred million dollar, you know, hotel chain, not a $1 billion chain? And so, yeah, I was terrified of it. And so, but then 3 years ago, through a series of events, I realized, like, the time is now. I got to go for it. So we launched a Kickstarter and raised a lot of money to at least get the ball rolling. Fast forward 3 years, that money has got us to where we are now. So we should be breaking ground this year, downtown Nashville, and building the first purpose hotel.
It is so awesome. And I've kind of watched you develop the ideas in it mature. And I get to hang out with a lot of social entrepreneurs in my own life. And as I talk about, hey, did you see this, doing that, it has inspired so many other people to do kind of cool things. So I have a friend in Minneapolis who's launched a company to go after supplies for offices, coffees and papers and decor and candles and all of these things that are all local charities that, or they give back to that charity through using them. And it really came from this idea of the Purpose Hotel, of saying,
that's crazy.
Yeah. If you're going to have cookies at your meals, tell the story of the baker, local bakery that does it, so that you're encouraging people to do that. And, oh, I'll source all of that for you and help you build out your unique story. So then it just becomes a checklist for you to execute on, because most people want to do the right thing. They're just so swamped, they can't share the time to do it. So, and it all came out of this idea of you saying, shouldn't we be telling a story, and can't we use the money to change lives and do good?
I love it.
Yeah. So it's very cool.
Yeah. I haven't heard any of those stories. So that's, but I hope, I mean, obviously it's a dream and a good thing for other businesses to, you know, kind of model what we're doing. I just hope we're able to get our hotel up first before another hotel comes in and steals the whole concept.
Yeah, I bet you do. Because it's, you know, the typical hotel developer is mass and velocity. And, you know, as much as they want to tell the story, You know, if it's not in your heart, not in your passion, it just doesn't really get done.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think that's one of the reasons WeWork has taken off so much, because they provide space, but it's so unique and they tell lots of stories with the space.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you combine that with a social conscience to change the world, you know, God's behind it. Who can be against it?
Yep.
So you have a new book coming out, I'm Possible. So April 16th on Amazon and, as they say, wherever books are sold.
That's right.
So tell us about it. Tell us about the book, the title, kind of what inspired you.
Yeah, well, first of all, I was never pursuing a book deal. It was kind of accidental. Several years ago, Johnny Cuff asked me to speak at his conference. And I was like, dude, I'm not a speaker. I'm not a pastor. I can't even remember a talk. So I was like, I think I'm the wrong guy for this. But then I was like, wait a minute, it'd be cool if I drew a talk in Photoshop, you know, just kind of created a multimedia piece that I could narrate as I was on stage speaking. And so I did that, and it kind of blew up. The response far exceeded my expectations. And so then I started presenting that really all over the country. And then every time I would do it, people were like, where is this online? I got to see this again. And so then I finally released it online, and then it went fairly viral from that point. Kind of launched an accidental speaking career. And so now I've been presenting my story all over the country for a few years. And so then an agent approached me and she said, hey, this needs to be a book, your story. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. And so they went and pitched it, and HarperCollins picked it up. And essentially the book is just my life story about how I was a kid. I really just didn't think I was capable of anything. I just didn't feel smart. I didn't feel accomplished. I didn't have a lot of confidence. And my dad would always just drill Philippians 4:13 into me. You can do all things through Christ who strengthens you. And, you know, I got fired from my first job. I was told I wasn't creative and was told to go be a youth pastor of all things.
Yeah, because that's like the worst penance you can go pay for not being creative. Go hang out and entertain a bunch of teenagers.
Right. Yeah. And trust me, I have nothing against youth pastors, but the way they said it was very just kind of, I don't know, felt very insulting. So I nearly failed my only photography class. And so there was just a lot of, you know, voices in my head. So I didn't think I could do much. And so then I go on to tell the story of how I overcame that. My photography accomplishments and how I kind of blew up in that world. But then I ultimately realized that success doesn't really matter. So what does matter? And then I tell the story of all the kind of humanitarian stuff I've done. But basically, it's a book about chasing ideas, how saying no to idea one could mean saying no to idea 20. So I think a lot of people, when they have their first idea, they think like, that's the one. That's going to be the rest of their life. That's going to be the, you know, their future. But the thing is, like, if you have idea one, that probably means you're going to have a ton more ideas. That means you're a creative person, an entrepreneur, and you've got a lot in you. So if you say no, if you cave to that first idea, chances are you're caving to a lifetime of beautiful ideas. And so it's really just encouraging people through my story to jump into fear and to just embrace it. I mean, yeah, you might fail many, many times. I failed at several of my big projects, but I'm so grateful for them because I'm still learning so much in those processes. Like, I spent 4 years building a social network, an app, and, you know, that experience has taught me so much about the hotel journey and everything else I'm doing. So, yeah, it's just my story in a book about ideas.
That's awesome. And this idea that ideas are creative, that they build on each other and magnify the next one, I think is something that creative people get. It's got to be 20 years ago now, standing outside of a hotel, and out from a tour bus pops Snoop Dogg. And we're in Corpus Christi, Texas. And he said, you know, any place to get breakfast? I said, yeah, I'm actually walking to a Mexican restaurant now to get breakfast. So we walked along together and ended up having breakfast together. And he had a notebook with him. And so I said, what's the notebook? And he said, well, it's my ideas. I write all the ideas that come to me. And I always keep this with me so that when I'm looking for the next song, when I'm looking for the next business, I've got it right here. And I collect all of those. And I began to notice that a lot of creatives, a lot of particular songwriters, musicians will do that because they just don't want to, they don't know when inspiration's going to spark, but they're prepared for it.
That's exactly right. I do the exact same thing, but in Evernote on my iPhone. And I mean, I will straight up interrupt a conversation if I have a thought or an idea strike me. I have to get on my phone and type it out because I know those moments are gold. And if I don't document them immediately, they're gone. So I applaud Snoop Dogg. That's amazing because I do the exact same thing.
I think that's one of those things that if people were more conscious of their own creativity, they'd realize that most people have that kind of creative spark in them. They're just not giving it fuel to ignite. And sometimes just writing it down and then going back and looking at it, you impress yourself.
Yeah, it's true. It's always, I mean, I have hundreds of ideas and never know under a tag. And when I go back and look at that tag, it's interesting to see all the really crap ideas, but there's some jewels in there for sure. And sometimes I'm bummed that I didn't pursue them. Like there's some ideas I've had that have made millions of dollars that other people have created. Like, for example, I came up with an idea years ago for something called the Selfie Light that I still own that domain name, actually, the selfielight.com. And now Target and Best Buy, every big electronic store sells different versions of the Selfie Light. And I had that idea years before they did, you know, but I never pursued it. So yeah, it's always interesting.
It is. So, you know, as many things, and you're still a relatively young man, as many things as you've accomplished and that you've got going forward, what do you want to be remembered for in the end?
Yeah, I think ultimately just a good husband and a good dad, you know, a good family man, family first for sure. You know, I hope to be remembered as a man of faith and who listened to God and pursued those crazy whispers. Because I think that's what ideas are. I describe it in my book as I feel like those ideas are God is throwing paper wads at us and they have a message on them. And we have to acknowledge that we've just been hit with one and we have to read the message and ultimately go execute them. You know, whereas a lot of people, they shut those things down immediately. You know, oh, I'm not creative. I can't do that. Yeah. Or I'm too old or I'm too young or I'm too broke or I don't have a platform or, you know, there's a long, long list of reasons that people come up with. It's the resistance, right? It's the war of art. And so I thrive on that. I know that moment is gold. I know it's God. I know it's time to go. And sometimes, you know, I don't think it's God. Sometimes it's just a goofy idea. But I feel like all the ideas that have hit me that seem holy, you know, the ones that help, that are essentially the gospel, that serve the poor, that love on others, those are the ones that I know are truly, truly the Lord handing me something really special.
That's awesome. You know, one of the questions I just thought of, and I know we're running up against, you know, a hard break, is that how important is it to surround yourself with people who inspire you, who are creative, who bring quality to your life? And, you know, and what reminded me of that as I'm looking at the list of speakers for Catalyst, and, you know, we got yourself, John Acuff, and Carlos Whitaker, which are all people who you all do community together.
We do, yeah.
You're friends, you support each other. I'm fascinated by this idea of being in community. How important is that to maybe not just your creativity, but to that execution, the accountability? What's it mean to live in that kind of environment?
Yeah, I think it's really crucial to do that. I mean, it's funny because I often don't feel like I'm, you know, just always in community. But as I wrote the acknowledgments from my book and the thank yous, it really hit me that, oh my gosh, I do have a very vast, wide-ranging community of creative people that I dip into. You know, I've got with John and Carlos and Kyle Chowning and Derek Webb, we have a group. We used to get together every week. Now it's essentially a text chain that we're always just texting each other and talking about our wins or losses or projects, you know, going on. Then I'm in a men's group, two different men's group with two different churches. And we only get together maybe once a month on somebody's back porch. And there's usually, you know, cigars or, you know, it's late at night around a campfire. We're not reading a book or anything. We're just being together. And it's just so life-giving. And then I'm in, just got a lot of designer friends I email with and photographers. And so I think it's played a massive role in my career and my confidence and just sharing the wins and losses along the way.
I think that's gold right there. And if people take nothing else away, this idea that you have to be intentional about who you surround yourself with and who you're learning from, even if it's not sitting around the campfire, even if it's just following people and reading what they're doing and enjoying their art and learning from it. If people want to follow you and connect to you, how do they do that?
It's just jeremycoward.com. It's at jeremycoward on all social networks. It's at the Purpose Hotel on all social networks, and it's thepurposehotel.com. I think that about sums it up.
That's enough for anybody. So, Jeremy Cowart, I am so pumped that you're going to be joining us for Catalyst University, and I am so excited to be on this journey of watching you change the world. You're just doing amazing things, and I'm so appreciative of that.
Ron, thanks, man. Thanks for having me here today. I really appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you in June. Hey, thanks for sticking it out with this. You know, we don't normally do kind of these commercial things at the end because it's about you, not about us. But one of the things that we've put together is a book for the Lenten season called 40 Days of Community. And you don't have to be faith-driven leader to enjoy this. But in a lot of traditions during Lent, they give something up. Well, as you can tell, when you look at pictures of me, of my weight and the other things in my life, I am terrible at giving things up. And frankly, it doesn't give me joy. It gives me energy. So what I want to do is use 40 days of praise and 40 days of changing the world. So we created an ebook called The 40 Days of Community. It's absolutely free. It takes you through 40 days of Lent and the things you can do, you know, like adopt a puppy. If you can't afford to go adopt a puppy, then write a check to your local shelter for a week's worth of food for a puppy in there. But it's the things we can do in our lives that are easy that some days we forget about. You know, buy the person at Starbucks behind you, you know, their coffee. Or one of my things growing up with a single mom is, you know, when I see single mom with kids in a restaurant, I try to buy their meal for them just because I wish somebody had done that for my mom when we were in that time in our life in that season. So this book is about those things. It's getting incredible reviews coming in. We want you to have this. It's no cost. You can go to ronkitchens.com and there's a link right there. You put in your email. We send you the book. We're not going to harass you about anything else. There's no fees. There's no handling charges. This is about you and helping you thrive for those 40 days. Good luck. God bless. We'll see you next week.
Ron, that was an awesome interview with Jeremy. I am so excited to see him at Catalyst University on June 20th in Kalamazoo. If you have one thing that you are really hoping that people take away from this interview, what is that one thing, Ron?
Permission to be great and then permission to pivot from that greatness. Don't get stuck with early success thinking, well, now I've got to do that for the rest of my life. That's how I'm defined. Jeremy's proof that you have permission to be great at other things as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing your man crush with us, Ron, and doing that interview. And we look forward to next week hearing from you on the Always Forward Leadership Podcast with Ron Kitchens.
Thanks for joining us. We hope today's conversation inspired you to keep moving forward on your leadership journey. To connect with Ron, you can tweet him at Ron Kitchens or send him a message via ronkitchens.com. If you are listening via iTunes, please leave a review. It really helps us connect to you, grow our impact, and keep moving always forward.